if you had had the extraordinary good fortune to go to theological seminary 20 years ago, you would have heard a lot about a phrase that was used a lot called salvation history. And this is a phrase that came out of German theology, which is very appropriate and fitting, that there are two kinds of history in the world. One is the history that we see, that we document, that we understand, the founding of our country, the Vietnam War, whatever you want to say, the history of my life, my illnesses, my children, and all the usual things. And then there's something that is quite unique and specifically special, and it's called salvation history. That is to say, the things that happened in the history of the world that actually had an eternal or enduring power and significance. What are the three events of salvation history, historically considered? The three events, if you want to talk about things that are important for eternity, as opposed to just important for a couple hundred years, are the giving of the law on Mount Sinai to the Jews, the coming of Christ and his death and resurrection, and finally, the second advent on the right there, which this church is named after, the final end of history when Christ shall come again. These are what are commonly called the events of salvation history. Now, there was an event that happened in the beginning of the third decade of the millennium, Roman times, in which a man came into the world who was part of a drama that was infinitely larger than his own person. Unlike all the things that happened to you and me, which are important for a brief period of time, what happened to John was more significant. And so significant was this man called John the Baptist that Jesus said that of those who have been born of woman, no one is greater than this man. This man was at the absolute acme of human nobility. He is the model of a person who has ever lived, according to Jesus. He said that he was the greatest of all men. He was in a class by himself. Now, this man, his significance for the human race is what I'd like to talk about just for a few moments today during this important service. The verse that I'd like you to go out with is the eighth verse of John chapter 1, where John the Baptist is described as follows. He was not the light, but he came to bear witness to the light. Now, John was very different from me and you, because, you see, you and I think that we're God. We are. I mean, it's all I know. I was born, and I live, and I make the decisions around here, and I'm all I know is what I know. And when the light goes out in my life, when I die, that's the end of my world. I don't know about you. Apparently, this man did not regard himself as the light. And in that view, he is unique in the history of humanity, because everybody here thinks they're God. I mean, I'm not putting anybody down, because I'm right with you, but, you know, when I'm in traffic, in gridlock in New York City, Darn it, I'm going to get off the bus or out of the taxi cab like a Seinfeld character and walk, because I'm going to take things in my own hands. We commonly call this control. You know, America was founded on the idea that we're all our own gods. We control, we have the way, and we're the light, and I'm God and you're God. One of the main reasons why I've been at such great and totally failed pains to talk you out of the idea of free will, I've been at such total and failed pains for 8 years to talk you out of the idea of free will is because if you believe in free will, you believe that you're your God. See, when a person who believes in free will, and everybody does, I'm well aware of this, but the idea of free will is that when I'm faced with, for example, a choice between choosing Jesus and going against him, darn it, I've got free will and I can make that choice. Now, of course, if that were true, then I'd be God, because I would choose. Do you understand what I'm saying? If I believed in free will, I'd become God, because I've got freedom. I can do what I darn well want to do, and gosh darn it, whatever he's done, that's fine, but it's up to me to decide. Now, if that's true, and I ask you to consider it, then you're your own God. And anybody who believes in free will, theologically speaking, you're your own God. The Church of Rome never believed in free will until 1711, when they took a chaotic 180-degree turn to free will because of certain conditions of 18th century, 17th century aristocracy in France. And we believe in free will because we're Americans. I mean, after all, isn't that written into the thing? Well, it's not. And if you believe you have free will in the sense of being able to actively choose, well then, obviously, empirically, you must not be seeing how your life has gone. Anybody here in AA? Anybody here in the 12-step program? If you believe in free will and you're in a 12-step program, you have not thought it through. Now, similarly, if you believe that you have a choice to decide yay or nay to God, well, then you're your own God. More power to you. But look at your life. Have you been lived or have you lived? Well, most people have been lived. How did you happen to marry your second wife? I mean, what accounted for that? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. John was living in what we would want to call salvation history. Because unlike everybody else who thinks they're God, John was not the light. And this was a huge breakthrough. For any person to actually come to believe that he or she is not God is just incredibly significant. Because, you know, I always think about Stephen Jay Gould. I mean, he is, I don't want to get into Stephen Jay Gould, but he, this crusading atheist, he said the one problem he had reading his books up in New York before he died was that he couldn't quite put his head around the extinction of the light known as death. Well, yes, we want to be the light, but we're not the light. And John the Baptist was the most extraordinary case of the first man who ever significantly believed that he was not the light. Well, that's the first thing about John. It made him unique. He had a couple of other unique features. It says that John came to bear witness. Now, there is a very great truth that your life is sort of a kind of superficial kind of bundle of impulses and chance events, unless it were true that God had given you something to do in your life. Now, let me say, this is why I get my head around the curtain of the tartan, because we're really talking about Reformed Christianity here in Scottish dress. Emphasized dress. Reformed Christianity, which is the religion of Scotland until about 50 years ago, and now nothing. Yeah, I've been there recently. Reformed Christianity is very much one of the insights that the Reformed Christianity and Scottish divinity, as it's often called, gave to the world, is that we derive our significance from being in the hands of a purpose larger than ourselves. And this is tremendously relieving. If you think that you've got to make up your purpose, I pity you. Because it's all a bunch of possibilities. It's all come and go, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Maybe this, maybe that. Flotsam and jetsam, tumbleweed connection. He was not the light, he wasn't God, but he was in the hands of a great and sublime purpose. And one of the great gifts of Reformed and Scottish Christianity to the world was that it saw the human being as one who lived most satisfactorily and serenely when she or he realized that he had come to do something, that he was in the hands of a purpose. So if you have lost someone you love, you see that as ultimately the hand of God. If you have lost half your stomach, you see that as ultimately something that God is doing in you. You don't divorce your victimizations and your losses from the power of God. If you are living alone and are unhappy about living alone, you don't just chafe because your God didn't get what she or he wants at this moment, but you see that it's in the hands of a larger and sublime and powerful purpose. And this is the essence of what John the Baptist gave to the human equation, according to which Jesus said he was the greatest man who ever lived, bar none, greater than Sophocles, greater than Leonidas, greater than Confucius, greater than Lao Tzu, greater than Pythagoras, greater than Phidias, greater than anyone you want to mention until he came, because he knew that he wasn't God, that he was in the hands of a profound purpose, and that his life derived its significance from being a referral entity. He was referring to something that was not himself. Now, you know, I can't read the Birmingham paper without always bringing it back to me. Do I know the people that wrote the letter to the editor today and how silly they are? What birthdays are the local birthdays, especially if they're about my age range? Why do I read the obituaries? I want to know who died who's older than I am so I have enough years. Or who was unlucky to lose, you know, someone at age 37. The power of movies, it's all about me. And the greatness of John the Baptist was in the salvation history of God. He was given to be a unique specimen of human nature. He was not God, he was in the hands of a purpose, and he was here to give reference to something else. It is very powerful when people are not involved in themselves. Obviously, you and I are. I'm no paragon, are you? But I do know that every so often when you find somebody who really is interested in the thing itself, I have a real problem with all the palaver. People are constantly having to shake my hand and look in my eye and say how you doing before we get onto the subject. Now I know that's part of the region and I like to be polite just like you do, but I kind of wanted to say, come on, let's get to the issue here. I don't really care whether you like me, and that's really true. I only care whether you agree with me. My job in this church is to persuade you that you have no free will, that you're in the hands of a merciful and benign God, and that nothing that happens to you is without reference to that ultimate God, and that the purpose of living happily and serenely is by pointing to another. We know this in life. We know this in our families. Our lives derive all the benefit in the world when we point them towards another, towards someone we're helping, some project, you name it. Well, what am I saying? And I'll finish, because we've got a lot to do in a short time. The power of the gospel is that God gave us this unique individual, and he never gave us one like him before, and he's never given us one quite like him since, except for one thing. Jesus commented towards the end of his human ministry that while John was greater than Sophocles and Phidias and Alexander the Great, he was the greatest man who'd ever lived because of his complete self-giving. That the person who is least in the kingdom of Christ is greater than John. Jesus said that, by the way, three times. He said that the person who is least in the kingdom of Christ is greater than John. Now, why is that? Well, I can't be John. I'm just as involved as you are in myself, in some form or another, obviously. That's why ministers have to be with you. But I do know this, that what John was given in this remarkable, unique situation, which was to cast his net totally on the waters and wait what happened. Unlike everyone else, there was a tug at the other end of the line. God chose to intervene in human affairs uniquely, because when John gave himself away, there was an answer at the other end of the telephone. And the answer was a benign and merciful God. You know, one of the things that John Calvin taught, I'm not trying to talk as if I'm talking to Reformed people. I happen to be, to some extent, Reformed. But one of the great things is that Soli Deo Gloria means that God is totally in charge, he's enigmatic, he's complete, and he rules the roost, and don't answer back. But God has shown himself to be a particular kind of God. He is the God and Father of one man, our Lord Jesus Christ, who was, by definition and action, a merciful and benign friend. It is not purely a God of the beyond. It is a God who, when John the Baptist gave himself away, and as you know, he lost his life in the middle of it, the God that we have is the God of grace and not of judgment. The God of grace and truth, and not of the wrath. It is the God who sees us as we are, but loves us nevertheless. So when John gave himself away, he wasn't giving himself away to sort of the no-exit, cul-de-sac, Jean-Paul Sartre, existential nothingness. He was giving himself away to a God who has shown himself to be totally in your corner. So I'm entirely comfortable with the Reformed emphasis. So provided it is always linked to the character of God to be utterly and completely and 100% compassionate. That is the essence of the Christian religion. It makes me and you on an altogether different platform than even the great man, John the Baptist, because we know when we fall at our feet, we're not going to be dusted out the door, but we're going to be lifted up and embraced and forever and ever held in the loving hands of a good shepherd. Thank you for hearing me out. As we are seated, let us pray. Help us, O Father, to deconstruct our own divinity, to get impatient with our own need to be in total charge 24/7, and to give us the complete confidence through your Son that we can give ourselves away to one whose only desire is that we be loved, forgiven, and cherished for the sake of thy Son.